Administrator, have you heard of Fronig's syndrome?
It's a very rare genetic disease among the RA, Kynan said. Very rare.
From what I understand of it, the disease is caused because of deficiencies in two unrelated gene sets, Sagan said. One gene set regulates the development of nerve cells and specifically of an electrically insulating sheath around them. The second gene set regulates the organ that produces the array analog for what humans call lymph. It does some of the same things and does other things differently. In humans, lymph is somewhat electrically conductive, but in the array, this liquid is electrically insulating. From what we know of array physiology, this electrically insulating quality of your lymph usually serves no particular benefit or detriment, just as the electrically conductive nature of human lymph is neither a plus or a minus. It's just there.
Yes, Kynan said.
But for array who are unlucky enough to have two broken nerve development genes, this electrical insulation is beneficial, Sagan said. This fluid bathes the interstitial area surrounding array cells, including nerve cells. This keeps the nerve's electrical signals from going astray. What's interesting about array lymph is that its composition is controlled hormonally, and that a slight change in the hormonal signal will change it from electrically insulating to electrically conductive. Again, for most array, this is neither here nor there, but for those who code for exposed nerve cells,
it causes seizures and convulsions and then death as their nerve signals leak out into their bodies, Kynan said. Its fatality is why it's so rare. Individuals who code for electrically conductive lymph and exposed nerves die during gestation, usually after the cells first begin to differentiate and the syndrome manifests.
But there's also adult-onset Fronig's, Sagan said. The genes code to change the hormonal signal later, in early adulthood, which is late enough for reproduction to happen and the gene to be passed on, but it also takes two faulty genes to be expressed.
Yes, of course, Kynan said. That's another reason why Fronig's is so rare. It's not often that an individual will receive two sets of faulty nerve genes and two sets of genes that cause later life hormonal changes in their lymph organ. Tell me where this is going.
Administrator, the genetic sample from you when you came on board shows that you code for faulty nerves, Sagan said.
But I don't code for hormonal changes, Kynan said. Otherwise, I'd be dead already. Fronig's expresses in early adulthood.
This is true, Sagan said. But one can also induce hormonal changes by killing off certain cell bundles within the RA lymph organ. Kill off enough of the bundles that generate the correct hormone and you can still produce lymph. It will simply have different properties. Fatal properties in your case. One can do it chemically. Kynan's attention was drawn to the syringe that had been lying on the table through the entire conversation.
And that's the chemical that can do it, I suppose, Kynan said.
That's the antidote, Sagan said. Jane Sagan found Administrator Kynan Suen Su admirable in his way. He didn't crack easily. He suffered through several hours as his lymphatic organ gradually replaced the lymph in his body with the new altered fluid, twitching and seizing as concentrations of the electrically conductive lymph triggered nerve misfires randomly through his body, and the overall conductivity of his entire system heightened with each passing minute. If he hadn't cracked when he did, it was very likely that he wouldn't have been able to tell them that he wanted to talk. But crack he did, and begged for the antidote. In the end, he wanted to live. Sagan administered the antidote herself, not really an antidote, as those dead cell bundles were dead forever. He'd have to receive daily shots of the stuff for the rest of his life. As the antidote coursed through Kynan's body, Sagan learned of a brewing war against humanity, and a blueprint for the subjugation and eradication of her entire species. A genocide, planned in great detail, based on the heretofore unheard-of cooperation of three races and one human. Chapter 2 Colonel James Robbins gazed down at the rotted, exhumed body on the morgue slab for a minute, taking in the decay of the body from more than 1 year under the dirt. He noted the ruined skull, fatally misshaped by the shotgun blast that carried away its top third, along with the life of its owner, the man who might have betrayed humanity to 3 alien races. Then he looked up at Captain Winters, Phoenix Station's medical examiner.
"Tell me this is Dr. Boutin's body," Colonel Robbins said.
"Well, it is," said Winters.
"And yet it's not."
"You know, Ted, that's exactly the sort of qualified statement that's going to get my ass reamed when I report to General Mattson," Colonel Robbins said.
"I don't suppose you'd like to be more forthcoming."
"Sorry, Jim,"
Captain Winters said, and pointed to the corpse on the table. "Genetically speaking, that's your man," Winters said. "Dr. Boutin was a colonist, which meant he's never been swapped into a military body. This means that his body has all his original DNA. I did the standard genetics testing. This body has Boutin's DNA. And just for fun, I did a mitochondrial RNA test as well. That matched, too."
"So what's the problem?" Robbins asked.
"The problem is with bone growth," Winters said.
"In the real universe, human bone growth fluctuates based on environmental factors like nutrition or exercise. If you spend time on a high-gravity world and then move to one with lower gravity, that's going to influence how your bones grow. If you break a bone, that's going to show up, too. Your entire life history shows up in bone development."
Winters reached over and picked up part of the corpse's left leg, which had been sheared from the rest of the body, and pointed to the cross-section of the femur visible there.
"This body's bone development is exceptionally regular. There's no record of environmental or accidental events on its development, just a pattern of bone growth consistent with excellent nutrition and low stress."
"Boutin was from Phoenix," Robbins said.
"It's been colonized for 200 years. It's not like he grew up on a backwater colony where they're struggling to feed and protect themselves."
"Maybe not.
But it still doesn't match up," Winters said. "You can live in the most civilized place in human space and still fall down a flight of stairs or break a bone playing sports. It's possible that you can get through life without even a greenstick fracture, but do you know anyone who's done it?"
Robbins shook his head.
"Well, this guy did. But actually, he didn't, since his medical records show he broke his leg. This leg."
Winters shook the chunk of leg. "When he was 16, skiing accident. Collided with a boulder and broke his femur and his tibia. The record of that isn't here."
"Well, I hear medical technology is good these days," Robin said.
"Oh, it is excellent, thank you very much," Winters said. "But it's not magic. You don't snap a femur and not leave a mark. And even getting through life without breaking a bone doesn't explain the consistently regular bone development. The only way you're going to get this sort of bone development is if it develops without environmental stress of any kind. Boutin would have had to live his life in a box."
"Or a cloning creche," Robin said.
"Or a cloning creche," Winters agreed. "The other possible explanation is that your friend here had his leg amputated at some point and had a new one grown, but I checked his records. That didn't happen. But just to be sure, I took bone samples from his ribs, his pelvis, his arm, and his skull. The undamaged portion, anyway. All these samples showed unnaturally consistent, regular bone growth."
"You've got yourself a cloned body here, Jim."
"Then Charles Boutin is still alive," Robin said.
"Man, I don't know," Winters said. "But this isn't him. The only good news here is that by all physical indications, this clone was vatted right up until just before it died. It's extremely unlikely it was ever awake, or even if it was, that it was conscious and aware. Imagine waking up and finding your first and last view of the world was a shotgun barrel. That'd be a hell of a life."
"So if Boutin's still alive, he's also a murderer," Robin said.
Winters shrugged and set down the leg.
"You tell me, Jim," he said. "The Colonial Defense Forces makes bodies all the time. We create modified superbodies to give to our new recruits, and then when their service is through, we give them new normal bodies cloned from their original DNA. Do those bodies really have rights before we put consciousness into them? Each time we transfer their consciousness, we leave a body behind, a body that used to have a mind. Do those bodies have rights? If they do, we're all in trouble, because we dispose of them pretty damn quick.
Do you know what we do with all those used bodies, Jim?
I don't, Robbins admitted.
We mulch them, Winters said. There are too many to bury. So we grind them up, sterilize the remains, and turn them into plant fertilizer. Then we send the fertilizer to new colonies. Helps to acclimate the soil to the crops humans plant. You could say our new colonies live off the bodies of the dead. Only they're not really the bodies of the dead. They're just the cast-off bodies of the living. The only time we actually bury a body is when a mind dies inside of it.
Think about taking some time off, Ted, Robin said. Your job is making you morbid.
That's not the job that makes me morbid, Winter said, and pointed to the remains of not Charles Boutin.
What do you want me to do with this?
I want you to have it reinterred, Robin said.
But it's not Charles Boutin, Winter said.
No, it's not, Robbins agreed.
But if Charles Boutin is still alive, I don't want him to know we know that.
He looked back at the body on the slab.
And whether this body knew what was happening to it or not, it deserved better than what it got. A burial is the least we can do.
Ah, goddamn Charles Boutin,
General Greg Matson said, and kicked up his feet on his desk. Colonel Robbins stood at the other side of the desk and said nothing. General Matson disconcerted him, as he always had. Matson had been the head of the Colonial Defense Forces Military Research Arm for almost 30 years, but like all CDF military personnel, had a military-issued body that resisted aging. He looked, as did all CDF personnel, no more than 25 years old. Colonel Robbins was of the opinion that as people advanced in rank through the CDF, they should be made to appear to age slightly. A general who looked 25 years old lacked a certain gravitas. Robbins briefly imagined Matson appearing to be his true age, which had to be somewhere in the vicinity of 125 years old. His mind's eye saw something like a scrotal wrinkle in a uniform. This would be amusing to Robbins, save for the fact that at 90 years of age himself, he wouldn't look all that much better. Then there was the matter of the other general in the room, who, if his body showed his real age, would almost certainly look younger than he already did. Special forces disconcerted Robbins even more than regular CDF. There was something not quite right about people being 3 years old, fully grown, and totally lethal. Not that this general was three. He was probably a teenager.
So our array friend told us the truth, General Szilard said, from his own seat in front of the desk. Your former head of consciousness research is still alive.
Blown the head off his own clone. Now that was a nice touch, General Matson said, sarcasm dripping out his voice. Those poor bastards were picking brains out of the lab equipment for a week afterward. He glanced up at Robbins.
Do we know how he did that? Grow a clone? That's something you shouldn't be able to do without someone noticing. He couldn't have just whipped one up in the closet.
As near as we can tell, he introduced code into the clone vat monitoring software, Robin said. Made it look like one of the clone vats was out of service to the monitors. It was taken out to be serviced. Boutin had it decommissioned and then put it in his private lab storage area and ran it off its own server and power supply. The server wasn't hooked into the system and the vat was decommissioned, and only Boutin had access to the storage area.
So he did whip one up in the closet, Matson said.
That little fucker.
He must have had access to the storage area after he was presumed dead, Szilard said. Are you saying that no one thought it odd he had a clone vat in storage?
Robbins opened his mouth, but Matson answered.
If he was a good research head, and he was, he'd have a lot of decommissioned and surplus equipment in storage, in order to tinker and optimize it without interfering with equipment that we were actually using. And I would assume that when we got to the vat, it was drained and sterilized and disconnected from the server and the power supply.
That's right, Robin said.
It wasn't until we got your report that we put two and two together, General Szilard.
I'm glad the information was useful, Szilard said. I wish you had put two and two together earlier. I find the idea that military research had a traitor in its ranks, and as the head of an extremely sensitive division, appalling.
You should have known.
Robbins said nothing to this,